Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got in my definition. But it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings. More so than any other. And our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss the grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you love this podcast too.
Welcome. This is the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. Jeremy Moss here, hanging out with Matt Kennerly for an actual... You guys might get this before lunchtime, depending where you're located at.
Hey, awesome.
That's always a positive here. Website, mwcconnection.com, as always. If you don't know it, well, thanks for finding us, and check out that website as well. Twitter, same thing, mwcconnection, Mountain West Connection on Facebook, and we had conference games this week. A lot of conference games.
Yeah, we had at least one really significant out of conference game as well. But
I thought they both were significant.
They were both pretty interesting games in their own rights. And I think that with regards to the conference play, you know, some teams had very good weekends, and some teams had weekends that they will probably come to regret.
Bolian still has a job, right? Brian Bolian, excuse me, right? Is he still there? Did he make it back from the islands?
So far as I know, yeah.
Okay, me too. Just double checking, because
so we have
no visual evidence of that game, thanks to Hawaii hackers who like to watch games for free. So thanks for that, guys. But let's just get to the games. We don't need to waste any time chatting about our weekend, because it's early in the morning, and yeah, we want to get going here. So let's start off with the Commander in Chief game, which, did you know, because I was listening to this game on the radio, I didn't get to watch all of it, I heard a bit, watched a bit, and noticing late in the game, Navy has not scored any points. So I put out there, hey, just kind of curious and being lazy myself, when's the last time Air Force has shut out Navy? Apparently, never. It didn't happen again, but I thought that was an interesting note. Out of however many times they played, there's never been a shutout in this game. For I think either side, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of that is a product of the fact that the defense, you know, even despite the fact they gave up points at some point, it was a 28-14 win for the Falcons, by the way.
But yes, we need to mention that.
The defense, again, proved that they are one of the better units in the conference, because if you just kind of look at some of those key totals, you know, they held Navy, a rushing team, to 57 rushing yards. And they held them to 5 of 15 on third down, and they sacked, you know, Will Worth 6 times in the game. And they had 8 tackles for loss as a team. And so that's the kind of performance that you want to see out of a defense, especially in a rivalry game like this. Like, you know, they may have let them back into it a little bit late, but I think by that time, you know, the offense is playing well enough and the defense is playing well enough that it was basically out of reach.
Yeah, from what I saw in this game, man, Nate Romine... Here's what I said earlier to season to him, but more specifically, Jalen Robinette. I know the offense is predicated on he gets big plays because they suck the defense in. These are the games. Robinette 5 for 163, a touchdown, a 75-yard bomb, couple bombs. Tim McVay caught one as well. You would think Navy, who goes up against the triple option every week in practice for the most part, or something they're more familiar with than other teams, would realize, don't get sucked in. play your position. Like, if you're guarding a wide receiver, always guard him the same every time. If you're a linebacker, whatever your position is, always stick to that thing. But they got beat just like every team. When Navy does it, or Air Force does it, or Georgia Southern or Army does it, they'll get the deep pass. Georgia Tech and Robinette he possibly could be player of the week in the conference come Monday morning.
And I mean, it's really interesting too, because if you look at the yards per carry, you know, relatively speaking, the midshipmen really kind of held the running game in check. You know, the Falcons only ran for 173 yards as a team, but you know, nobody on the Falcons topped more than 63 yards, and that was Jacoby Owens, who did it on 15 carries. And I mean, if you look at the three guys who had the most carries, Owens, DJ Johnson, and Shane Davern, you know, they averaged, you know, 4.2, 4.1, 3.7 yards per carry, which is, you know, it's okay, but it's not necessarily the kind of production you normally see from the Falcons offense, especially on the ground. So to be able to, you know, find those big plays down the field through the passing game, despite the fact that your running game's kind of scuffling a little bit here and there, is actually kind of a big deal. And I think that on the whole, it makes this offense more dangerous that they can do that.
Oh, I think it does, because we mentioned our preview for both teams. Don't give up the big running play, because we figured the yards would be there, which they weren't really here for either team, more so for Air Force and the Navy. But the longest running play of the game was only 12 yards for DJ Johnson. So it's not like they were getting beat on these huge runs where the safeties or cornerbacks had to take a step into the middle of the field or take a few yards closer where the right bend linebacker. So it is kind of surprising that they still went deep and got these deep passes with play action plays where Navy should have been fine trusting their front linebackers and defensive line, knowing Owens or Johnson or even Nate Romine, who ran for 7 times for 2 yards, wasn't going to odds of them breaking a big play throughout the game was unlikely, but yet they still get beat down the field.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the other thing that makes made a difference in this game is the fact that Air Force forced 3 turnovers.
And do you know who got the first turnover in the second half?
Weston Steelhammer.
Of course he did. After sitting out, he's like, I'm going to get in this game and make a play.
Yeah, and he ended up 2 interceptions, actually.
Oh, that's right.
And I mean, you know, Haji Dunn actually had a very good game as well for the Falcons. He had, I believe, 2.5 sacks and a forced fumble for that 3rd turnover.
He sure did.
So, I mean, they really got after him, especially since they were forcing Worth to really throw the football more than I think Navy would have liked. You know, he ended up throwing the ball 30 times.
So let me ask you this. I'm on the ESPN box board. Is this a new thing where they have the defensive stats?
I'm not totally sure.
It's pretty nice, because I noticed, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right, Dunn. Not that I'd question, but I'm like, oh, I see it right here. Because I mentioned she has all the defensive tackles and sacks and turnovers. Air Force had, just overall real quick, 6 sacks, 8 for a loss, 3 pass defended, or pass breakups. That's, to get 6 sacks on an option offense, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, to be
I guess he threw 30 times, maybe not, but
well, I mean,
still,
to be able to force the midshipmen to throw to have to catch up, I think, is kind of the biggest win that the Falcons had all afternoon.
And Will Worth, he did pretty good trying to do that with, like I said, over 200. I don't even, did Keenan Reynolds ever throw for over 250 yards more than maybe a handful of times?
Not necessarily. That's not what Navy wants to do.
True. I'm just, it's just an interesting side note that he threw for that well. So also, this team's really good. They're missing Steelhammer for the first half. Lopata was out again for the whole game for another injury. So they're down 2 starting defensive backs. I guess this is a team you want to have those guys out if you're going to have any missing players against a team that's not really going to pass. And so I don't think that had too much of an impact until Steelhammer actually made the plays when he came in.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. That's a good game. Well, actually this, what's your, let me see if ESPN has up. I know we got to hustle along here, but I want to mention this now because we'll get to all the game, obviously get every game and look down the road. Some people are upset because we'll get the Aztecs lost, like, Boise State, when are they going to be in the conversation? San Diego State screwed them. Well, no, not really. It would help if they're undefeated, but I point out to a few people, hey, Air Force has a very good chance of being 11-0 when they face Boise faces Air Force end of the year.
Yeah, I mean,
I've seen really quick.
I mean, I think I may have said in our preseason preview, anything's kind of possible, because I think the Mountain Division especially is going to be pretty competitive.
Wyoming,
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, who would have thought? But at the same time, you know, I think that this, I mean, this is kind of an example, and we may talk about it with a couple of other teams in a minute, but, you know, when their strengths are somewhat limited, good teams still find a way to win. And that's this is the kind of game that Air Force would, you know, kind of struggling a little bit to run the football, which is what
they no points do. In the first half, too. It was 0-0 for a good portion.
Yeah, but they found a way to win. And I think that that's something that other teams, especially in the Mountain Division, should keep their eye on. This is a very good team, and they're not going away anytime soon.
Exactly. And really quick, I got the ESPN FPI. They're favored in every game by quite a good margin. Like Wyoming next week, 68% over 90 versus Hawaii. Army, which is coming, turning out to be a pretty good team so far, that's on the road. That gives them only a 43% chance to win. That's the only game they're not favored in until they meet Boise State, where Boise's an overwhelming favorite to win that game at this time. And so there's a good chance you, me, and Chris kind of called it early in the season after going through the Air Force schedule, like, well, maybe they can, because all their home games are not very difficult. Their toughest road game, they beat Utah State. Next one's probably Army and Wyoming. We'll see. But it'll be fun if that's the case, man. Whew. All right. Next game is my schedule here deceives me. San Jose State, New Mexico. Whew. Do you like points, Matt?
I love point explosions.
This, and I liked your tweet you put out in the account, something about a 3 meter wide garbage can. What was that you mentioned about the Russian defense?
I had written that, you know, a 3 foot pile of recycled electronics could provide better run defense than San Jose State's front seven right now.
Because the random USB cable would trip up Terrion Gibson, maybe?
Oh my God, man. I was watching that game, and if I were a Spartans fan, you know, we've gotten very low key. Spartan fans are like not happy with this team. And
no,
I'm starting
they want Carragher out.
And because, you know, 48-41, first of all, New Mexico hung on for the victory in this game, but really, they kind of ran away with it early. And if you look at some of these numbers in the box score, you get a sense of why, you know, the Lobos ended up running for 446 yards as a team, 7 yards per carry. But that number was right around 10 yards a carry in the first half. And I mean, if I'm a Spartan fan, like that kind of number is unacceptable, because it didn't seem like they had an answer for anything New Mexico threw at them. Like, they were literally just like gaining huge chunks on seemingly every carry. And, you know, they didn't necessarily need to extend drives. Like, New Mexico was only 5 of 14 on third down. But that was because more often than not, they didn't need to get the third down to move the chains, you know? They, you know, held onto the ball for 37 minutes. They, you know, converted every time they got into the red zone. They, you know, they just kind of basically ran the Spartans over. And then by the time they found a couple stops later in the game, you know, Kenny Potter tried to bring him back. And I think on the whole, he had a pretty good game. You know, he's 16 of 29, 3 touchdowns, 314 yards, and 1 pick.
And a surprise start, because all week it was Love starting. Love's getting the nod until game day. Wait a minute, Potter's out there.
Yeah, but I mean, they didn't find enough stops on defense to really make up the difference. And so,
yeah, offense did okay for San Jose. Like, the running game's caught on for them. They had a pretty solid game with, for the amount of time they could run, since they're down or having to keep up, they did okay in the running game. Like, Ziegler had 91 yards. Crawley had 2 for 20. Those two guys did okay. Cooper, not great, but if they had more chances to run the ball, had it been closer earlier, maybe, but New Mexico, man, like, Gibson, I tell people about New Mexico quite a bit. I'm like, watch this team. They're exciting to watch. Like, 60-yard run, 42-yard run. Gibson just crushes. Anytime he touches the ball, you can't tackle him. I don't know. Like, when he missed the game versus Rutgers, that was a big deal. You missed that explosive play, and he will do it against any team out there, and that's what makes this New Mexico team so dangerous when they're going to play Boise later on, Air Force, when they play Utah State. They're going to be dangerous and could win. We've seen it. They could win all those games. They just happened to lose versus freaking New Mexico State a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not only Gibson, too. Like, I think they have kind of a short yardage goal line back that they really like in Richard McCorley, who scored 3 times, had 85 yards, but his 3 touchdown runs were from, you know, 9, 1, and 6 yards. So to me, that gives you a sense of what the Lobos want to do when they get close to scoring. They want to give him the ball and have him punch it in. And again, you know, you would think San Diego State would find, or not San Diego State, San Jose State would find a stop at some point, and they just didn't.
Like, even Christian Togo came back, had six tackles, didn't really make much of an impact. It was Mark Adman who had a big game, 14 tackles.
Yeah.
And the key thing, only three for a loss, so they could not get anything, couldn't really stop it when Jordan ran or when Gibson or Corley or whoever's running the ball. And then with him, with having Lamar Jordan, here's the thing that kind of frustrates me as well if I'm a San Jose State fan. Mm-hmm. Austin Apodaca is out for a while. So Lamar Jordan, we know he's not the best thrower. He was 4 of 8 for 45 yards. Great. That's what he does. You would expect them to put a more emphasis on this running attack to stop the running game and not worry. Because I would rather, if I'm playing New Mexico, I'd rather have Lamar Jordan beat me in the air than have what they did yesterday shredding that San Jose State rush defense. Let Jordan go 10 of 12 for 300 yards. Great, 250. But don't let Gibson average 14 yards a carry.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most telling figure is the fact that San Jose State only had three tackles for loss yesterday.
Yep.
And when New Mexico is running the football as much as they do, you know, they had 64 carries as a team. That's not the kind of figure that you want. Like, you want to be able to get into the backfield and disrupt more. But, you know, when two of your three tackles for loss are coming from a guy like Bryson Bridges, you know, the front four just needs to get better because, you know, this isn't the last time that they're going to come up against a team that has a very strong running game. And if they can't find answers sooner rather than later, they're going to get eaten alive.
Yeah, when they play San Diego State, Nevada has an okay running game with James Butler. He can go off. It's we'll see. It's UNLV, I guess, with Lexington Thomas can run pretty well. So you want to know who next week's game is for New Mexico?
Is it Boise?
Yes, it is.
That'll be a fun game to watch.
I need to chat with our good friend Chris if he can join us for that because it'll be exciting. All right, so anything else we need to add? San Jose State, Potter seems fine. Same old, this is just same old Spartans. They throw well, can't stop the run. And so they were close this game, but is Carragher really close to not being back?
I mean, I'm not totally sure. To me, I would think that at some point this year, you want to see some kind of improvement. Because it's kind of like you said, they've been the same team pretty much all year long. Like, they can throw the ball pretty well. The running game is a little bit hit and miss, and the rush defense is just kind of atrocious. And especially with all the recruits that they brought in the last year or two, I think that, you know, if I were a Spartans fan, I would try to urge patience as much as possible, because it may be one of those things where, you know, there may be some performances that aren't pretty, but in the long run, they'll benefit from getting that kind of experience.
This was their second best offensive output of 41 points. They do play Hawaii next week at home, so maybe that's a chance for more competitive game. But what we saw versus Hawaii and Nevada last night, we'll get to later. They're actually making the switch to Drew Brown. Seems to be a smart choice for Nick Rolovich there.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the next game. San Diego State versus South Alabama.
Oh, Aztecs.
42-24. Here's the game. Like, I was watching this game. Do you want to know where I watched most of this game at?
Where did you watch this
game? I had some stuff in the morning, which is why I didn't really see a ton of Air Force Navy, just a little bit. I'm like, oh, I need to go switch my phones because I found a really sweet deal by having DirecTV. If you switch to AT&T with them, you get some pretty sweet deals, like just whatever, not a big deal, just saving some money, which is always a good thing. So I go there. They have TVs on. Oh, that's, I'm like, oh, can we switch it? Like, sure. Because they have DirecTV there, of course. So I'm like watching. I watch like the first half. I'm like, okay. It took me freaking like 2 hours to change our freaking phones at AT&T store. So I'm sitting there watching this game, coming back. And the dumb thing is, like, I'm saving a bunch of money. I'd switch up for the exact same phones.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and you're saving almost 50 bucks a month. You get Sunday NFL Sunday ticket free for like two more years. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. That's a good savings there. That's a good, pretty good perk. So, but like, I was paying attention, like, oh, we're getting these phones. The longest part is just transferring the freaking data. That's all it was. It's like transferring your stuff. So I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, it's okay. Here's the thing. I'm not going to pile on and saying, yeah, you lost South Alabama and go, haha, you lost. But they did it. Like, the offense played okay. It's a defense that concerns me. And don't, if people are giving crap to that long snapper, don't give that guy crap. He's the backup long snapper. And San Diego State was already losing by four at that point. when the ball sailed over the guy's head. And yes, the kicker should have just kicked it out of the end zone for a safety. Instead, he falls on at the 2-yard line. And I don't care if you're good at San Diego State or Alabama's defense or whatever, getting 2 yards should be able to be done by any football team. And they punch it in, go up 11, and then the score is bigger than what it was. Then driving down, the one time, I tell you, the one time they give it to a fullback, he fumbles, South Alabama picks up and returns it for a defensive touchdown. So there are really some quirky things at the end. So, if, yeah, you see 42-24. This is a back-and-forth game and a close game for throughout the game. It's just the 21 points that fourth quarter by South Alabama. 14 were basically gimme points or the 2-yard touchdown or 1-yard touchdown run, then the defensive score. But South Alabama beat you with a backup quarterback and shredded that vaunted secondary for the most part. 16-21. 3 touchdown passes in the air. The running game was non-existent for South Alabama, only 2.2 yards a carry. But secondary of DeMonte Casey, all these guys back there couldn't make stops.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the thing that really stuck out to me, too. And it's, you know, credit to the front seven, at least. They did manage to get 3 sacks, mm-hmm. including maybe what was the hit of the weekend from Calvin Munson. Yeah. Like, I thought, like, you know, RIP that dude after that. But yeah, I mean, kind of like you said, I was actually kind of shocked by how easily South Alabama threw the football against this defense, just because, you know, they're a spread offense. That's what they want to do, but they moved the chains fairly easily. You know, if you look at the third down conversions, especially, South Alabama was better than 50%. And when you compare that to San Diego State on offense, you know, the Aztecs were only 2 of 10 on third downs. So they weren't extending drives when they had the opportunity in the same way that the Jaguars were.
And 0-2 on fourth down as well.
And I mean, the other thing that stands out to me, which is, I believe, kind of uncharacteristic for the Aztecs in particular, they had 10 penalties for 85 yards too. So, you know, they were shooting themselves in the foot, I think, more often than you would have liked. But again, you can't give up 11.5 yards per attempt against a team like South Alabama.
Also, really quick, I was surprised at that too, seeing those numbers during the game. Actually, they pointed out, not that you're wrong, that they caused unforced errors for the most part on the penalties. They're actually the most penalized team in the conference heading into this game. So maybe we should have saw a little bit of this coming, not penalty-wise, but at least with the spread, like, playing Cal, it's expected that you'll get a lot of yards allowed against you. You'll get touchdowns. They'll go deep. So I guess running a spread attack 3-4 wideouts is how... maybe Aztecs aren't as deep as we thought in the secondary.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was a couple of really nice individual plays that were made. You know, Trey Lomax, I believe, had one instance where, you know, he really laid out to defend against a certain pass that I think if the wide receiver for South Alabama had caught it, it probably would have been a touchdown. So it wasn't as though they weren't making plays. It was just the fact that, you know, Garvin, the South Alabama quarterback, was... he was finding holes in their coverages and he was just moving the football a little more easily than I think either of us would have expected. And, you know, when you can't get off the field like that, you know, you need to try and find big plays on offense. And Christian Chapman, if you look at the box score, his line was maybe okay. 13 of 22, 159 yards, no turnovers, had one touchdown, but he was sacked 4 times and, you know, he didn't find that many big plays down the field. Like, his longest pass was 33 yards, and I think he only had 2 passes that were longer than 20.
Yeah, wasn't this
one? And, you know, it's one of those things where at some point, it was something like that, yeah. Like, this is a team that when they got down, when they needed to be able to move the chains, they weren't always able to do so successfully. And I think that that's really what kind of betrayed them.
People think we pile on for this team, and the only thing I'll say, good teams don't lose to when they're in close situations. Like you said, the Air Force game, they found a way to win. They weren't scoring points in the first half. They found a way to win. Boise State probably had 2 games back to back, not very good games, found a way to win versus Washington State and Utah State. San Diego State gets in a fight. Yes, they very good performance versus Cal, had that game winning interception at the end of the game, went toe to toe, but. You got to, yes, I know South Alabama is getting better, but still, this is the game they probably most wanted to win, more than Cal, I would think, for some. You got embarrassed last year being up big, losing overtime to a team that didn't even make a freaking bowl game last year. And you show up to this game, Pumphrey showed up, had a very good game. It's just a defense, man. It's like, come on. Defense and...
I mean, they didn't... I was just going to say, they didn't complete a third down pass until like midway through the second quarter. Or like late in the second quarter. And that was when they ended up retaking the lead right before halftime. But it's just one of those things where, you know, especially early on, if you look at the drive chart, you know, their very first drive, third and eight, incomplete. You know, second drive, third and 10, incomplete. And then they ended up scoring on a short field the drive after that. But then, you know, third and five at their own 31. Again, you know, incomplete pass. And that's, I think, one of those areas that's, you know, that's a place where Chapman can learn from that experience and just get better at throwing, being able to move the chains on those third downs. Because especially later in the game, you know, third and three at their own 46, like it's, I believe this is in the fourth quarter, they're down four and it's an incomplete pass. And then South Alabama scores and they just, you know, third and one later on when they're down 18, late in the fourth quarter at the South Alabama 37, incomplete pass. So, you know, if you look at the box score, it says he had an okay game, but I think when you really get into those high leverage situations, Chapman can get better. And I think as they go along, he probably will. But this is just kind of a rough loss for the Aztecs
overall.
It is,
and I thought they had the game won because and late in the game, like here's the stretch that really defined the game. Aztecs are down 21-16. They do a nice, they drive 90 yards, 11 plays, get the touchdown, go for the two-point conversion. They're up 24-21 at that point. All right, we're good. But then South Alabama's like, I don't care. We'll do our own extended drive, 11 plays, 69 yards, go up 28-24. And then, like I said, the fumble on the snap, the guy, the kicker should have picked it up or ran it in the end zone or kicked it out of bounds because if you give up a safety, it's 30-24. Yes, South Alabama has the ball, but you're not down 35-24 when they score two plays later to make it still a two-score game. But if it's only a six-point game, your defense makes the stop, you can win. That's just some stuff you like. That's a, I'm not blaming the guy, but that's just a weird situation. No, you got to know where you're at in the field because that ball sailed like how far? It was like a good 30 yards down the field. It wasn't like it was just over the head he dove on it. The ball bounced and bounced for a while because it was a where's that here? Let me try to find it. At the 20 yard line. So maybe not as far as I thought, but it was a deep. Hold on a second here. Nope, here we go. Sorry, I'm going through the box score and it's not as concise as I would like. It was 4th and 3 at their own 46 yard line. So that ball sailed 44 yards before the guy got it because it was 1st and goal at the 2. So that ball did sail far, bounce, dude. I know it's a backup center. It sucks. It's not your fault you lost, but it more focus on this one situation. But the kicker, man, kick it out of bounds. Don't fall on it to 2. Don't pick it up. I thought he might pick it up and try to kick. I'm like, oh, crap, here's a touchdown coming. But I see he just dives on him. Like, no, let it roll because it was going to stop. Like, just kick it out of bounds. Pick it up and dive in the end zone. Give yourself up in the end zone for safety. But it's just some of those interesting. It's not like you practice those a lot, but it's still, it's like, you played football long enough. You should know the score in those situation. I know it's hard. I've played stuff where it's like, oh crap, I should have done this when I'm playing a game or something when I not this high level, but it's like, oh, that would have been better maneuver to do. And so and then the other fumble was just they give it to the fullback for some reason and then see ya, they go for a touchdown. They're still gonna win the West Division, right?
Probably. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so after that long talk, we'll take a brief timeout. I don't know who you'll hear from, but hey, have a listen or fast forward, and we'll be back in about a minute here. Next game, we got a crowded nightcap here. Wyoming, Colorado State for the bronze. It's a bronze boot. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's back in Laramie now. 38-17, Cowboys win. Is this the surprising results of the night to you?
No, the South Alabama San Diego State game is by far.
I guess that makes sense. This one kind of surprised me just because, you know, if you look at some of these numbers, you would think that Colorado State would have won this game, you know, because they outgained them on offense 481 to 434. You know, Colin Hill threw for 370 yards on, you know, 23 of 41 attempts. They had a better figure on third down. They were 7 of 17 compared to Wyoming's 5 of 14. And they forced two turnovers. So what happened?
Well, the rush offense was non-existent for Colorado State for the most part. That's an issue.
Okay.
They only averaged 3.5 yards per carry, because I watched a good amount of this switching back and forth for these late games. Kind of benefited by the Dietrich Clark 35-yard touchdown run and an Izzy Matthews 30-yard run. Take those away. Just interesting note to do that. They're now down to about 55 yards total rushing on 31 carries. So those two skew the numbers. So if you look at that, they really didn't run the ball well. And you want to know how much I love Josh Allen and Wyoming play calling?
How much do you love?
Josh Allen had it's 3rd and 15 late in the game when it's still kind of close in the third quarter. They call it, and they're in field goal range as well. They call a draw play. He goes 22 yards, dives over for the touchdown.
Huh. It all worked out.
The running defense also wasn't great for the Rams, because Brian Hill had a pretty good game, averaged almost 9 yards a carry and touchdown. But Josh Allen is more athletic, and I thought he didn't throw very well. Only 7 of 18, but that play, we've seen him about, look what he's done scrambling. Like, he did a few good things versus Nebraska, the game winner versus Northern Illinois. Last night, this run, the jump hurdle, like what he tried to do against Eastern Michigan, got stopped at the 1. He's becoming one of my more favorite quarterbacks. If he could throw better, he would be probably, top 3 QB in the conference, if he's a bit more accurate.
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, but I think at a minimum, you know, if you're a Colorado State fan, yeah, the overall result is disappointing. But, you know, at least you know that you have a quarterback who can produce against an okay defense. Like, I think Wyoming is kind of the midpoint between Northern Colorado and Minnesota. And, you know, they needed him to answer the bell. And he had his biggest game of the year. And he was finding receivers down the field. I think he had, how many plays of 15 plus yards. He had 8 plays and all of them went for at least 20 yards. And it wasn't as though he was really locking in on one receiver. You know, Danny Unwosu had 6 catches. Michael Gallup had 4 catches. Robert Ruiz had 4 catches. And, you know, even the guys further down were, you know, Olabisi Johnson only had 2 catches, but they went for 70 yards. So I think that, you know, you could be encouraged by the fact that even though the run game wasn't really there for the most part, you know, Dawkins and Izzy Matthews only combined for 73 yards on 18 carries.
What's up with Matthews' 5 carries overall? Come on.
That's a little strange, yeah. But I mean, you know, Hill needed to throw. They needed to catch up, and he kind of answered the bell, I think, more often than not. So I think that they can be encouraged by that.
They can. That it's second half, they were shut out, and so Wyoming made some changes. And looking here at the tackles and stuff for Wyoming's defense, I didn't realize Andrew Wingard is a very, very, very good safety. He had 17 tackles, 10 by himself, a sack, and AFL. You're starting defensive back.
Yeah, I mean, he's very quiet. He's like in a league full of pretty good safeties. He might be like one of the best.
Wasn't he a freshman All-American last year, I think? Him and Damien Bob Baber was right there as well, man. The secondary conference, like we said, secondary is great. Running back's really good. And there's a couple positions that are really, really good. But this game, like, I didn't catch enough of the second half to see what was up with CSU, but they missed a field goal. They had multiple 3-and-outs. Here's the problem, man. They had 3 3-and-outs, a missed field goal. Actually, 4 of their 5 drives were 3-and-outs in the second half.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And I actually misspoke earlier. They didn't create 2 turnovers. They had 2 turnovers. Okay. And Wyoming, you know, took advantage of both of those.
Yeah, they had a touchdown on a fumble.
Because, you know, they picked up the fumble, and then one play later, it's a 30-yard touchdown. Then when Hill threw his only interception in the game, that was right before halftime, I think,
yeah,
if I'm looking
six.
At this correctly. Yeah. And so that right there might have swung the game in a way that, you know, Colorado State just couldn't recover.
That was a 14. They gave up 21 points in the second quarter, 14 off turnovers. So And like I said, second half, they were punting, miss field goal, give up on down. So Wyoming's defense, which as much as we made fun of them last year, because they weren't very good last year, not that we're poking fun, but they were just young and not very good. Yeah, they, Colin Hill had a huge game. Second half, they showed up to play, and they got it done and allowed no points and had the defensive touchdown. Because this is what they're – how many pick sixes do they have? That's three in – who did they play last week? Was last week the Eastern Michigan game? That's three pick sixes in two games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, if you want to win games, especially in a conference like this, especially in a division like theirs, if you can show that kind of playmaking ability, excuse me, that can give you kind of a leg up from week to week.
Get some easy points.
That wasn't something that they were doing. That wasn't something they were doing at all last year. And so if they can continue doing that, you know, once or twice every other week, you know, they could pull an upset or two and make some noise.
It's really quick in the conference. Three of the seven pick sixes have been from Wyoming. One for Aztecs, New Mexico, and UNLV, and Tyler Horton of Boise State. So just a quick side note there. But so can we get back to bowling puns? Is it time yet? Maybe.
What are they? They're 3-1 now? 4-1?
No, 3-2 because they lost to stupid Eastern Michigan.
It's official then. We can start making bowling puns.
Tough road to go because really quick we'll move on here, but they have Air Force will be tough. I think they could maybe beat Nevada, maybe UNLV, maybe New Mexico. Maybe. It's possible. We'll see. They're in the neighborhood. Dang. They're in the neighborhood, I'll say. Give them that.
Anything can happen.
All right, so next game, is this a year game we're heading to, or should we do the Boise State game?
We can do whatever you like.
We'll keep you savoring Boise's game, Boise State, Utah State. Utah State showed up to play more than I thought they would in this game from what we saw recently. They did the offense. Oh, man. Here's the thing about Boise State that we all praised how great their offense was and is and should be. It hasn't been that this year so far. When they played last week, Washington State didn't play all that great. They won. Rippon had a couple interceptions. Last week, for some reason, they wanted to throw the ball a ton in the second half against Oregon State. The first, three possessions or four possessions, they were 3-and-out. They only beat Utah State 21-10. And give more credit to the defense than the offense because not that Utah State's offense is great, but they pretty much, the rushing attack, I know Devontae Mays didn't play, but they held Utah State to just 71 rushing yards. Kent Myers had to throw 50 times, 29 of 50 to get to 287. He had a nice touchdown late in the game, but I give credit more to the defense and the offense for Boise State pulling off this win.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of thing, Kent Myers can't do everything by himself.
He needs some help there.
Like, he is one of the better quarterbacks in this conference, but Utah State's not going to win if he's throwing 50 times a game. That's just not how they're built. You know, the young guys that they have, you know, Tarver and Rashad Lewis had, you know, pretty nice games. Lewis had 7 for 82 receptions. True freshman, yeah. And Tarver had 5 for 29, but, you know, he didn't really have very many big plays.
You know what my favorite name is now? Rod Quavion Tarver.
Exactly. But, you know, and I hate to place blame on, like, any one individual guy, but, like, Tawny Lindsey, 8 carries, 15 yards, that's just not going to get it done. Especially, you know, if you're on the road in a situation like this, you have to be able to be balanced on offense.
Share that blame with LaJuan Hunt. Come on, he had 5 for 9.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, credit to Boise State for really shutting them down because, I mean, they had, 5, 6 tackles for loss?
Yeah, 6 and 4 sacks.
And I mean, they really contested Myers' throws at almost every turn. You know, it was 50 throws, but they had like, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9 pass breakups I have credit for in the secondary. So, and they had 4 sacks as well. So they really got after Myers in a way that was, I would probably consider it very unforgiving. And on the other hand, you know, Brett Rippon, he was okay, but I guess he didn't really need to be spectacular because the defense, like you said, really kind of put this game away fairly early.
Yeah, McNichols ran the ball well. They had Cedric Wilson spotting for a 61-yard touchdown pass. Linebacker Ben Weaver had a pass one for 16 yards. So they brought in a little bit of a change in the game. But like I said before, the Boise State, yeah, they overall, they didn't play great. They played good enough to win. Defense was dominant. But like I said, going back to like Air Force, they did the same thing. Aztecs, there are some errors. But when you're at this point, when your expectations are so high, you should be good enough to get wins if there's an issue somewhere. And throwing the ball, ripping, had another poor game. Like, he's not the best quarterback in the conference. Who would you say that would be? If you had to pick one QB, who would be your top QB right now in the conference? Because it's not ripping.
Oh, man.
Can we say Nate Romine just because he's moving the offense good enough?
I mean, I think he's got an argument. I don't see why not. I mean, it's hard to say without looking at the numbers off the top of my head. I mean, to me, this is kind of, you can also say that, you know, the narrative is about, you know, missed opportunities to some extent too. Because if you look at the drive chart, you know, right before halftime, Brock Warren missed a field goal, right? That would have put him within, it was, you know, they would have been down one going into the half, right? 7-6. And then, you know, they come out after halftime, they have the ball first, they get to the Boise State 41, and they punt. And they, you know, they give credit to the punter. They do manage to pin Boise at the 15. But right after that, Boise State marches down the field, 10 plays, 85 yards, touchdown. And, the, you know, fairly or unfairly, it was basically over at that point because they never really mustered another drive until the end of the game. Because if you look at the drives after that, you know, 4 plays, punt, 3 plays, punt, 3 plays, punt.
They held Boise too. Like, they had chances. Like, they also forced, same thing, Boise State, 3 straight possessions, or 2, punt. So they had chances where the defense, hey, we made a stop, let's get a touchdown, let's get a field goal, let's get some points. And they couldn't do that until Boise finally cracked through to basically put the game away with that third touchdown, 21-3 at the start of the fourth quarter when they had the third and 17 touchdown pass. They go 36 yards. Yeah. It's like, oh, crap, it's over. When they get that deep pass to Cedric Wilson there for the win. So anything else? Are we good, I think?
I think we are. I mean, I think, you know, Utah State fans might be more frustrated than just about any other fans in the conference today.
Yeah, close. Set one score loss to Air Force, 11-point loss to Boise State. Like, it's just not... I get last week more so than this week, because this week, while they were, there were chances, but it wasn't like, oh, we had a ill-timed turnover that led to a touchdown right away, or we had a defensive letdown, or I guess the 36-yard touchdown pass is a big deal, but like even Jeremy McNichols, yeah, he had 132 yards, but it took him 30 carries to get there. He wasn't blowing them up for huge rushes at a time. He just kind of chipped away, yeah, and got moved down the field well enough.
I mean, and the other thing that may have played a role in a way that it hadn't in other games is, you know, we talked about penalties earlier with San Diego State. That's another thing that really crept up in this game, too. You had 12 penalties, 90 yards for the Aggies. And when you're on the road trying to pull an upset, you just can't be that undisciplined.
Yeah. Well, Boise State had 8 for 101, but the turnover is a big deal. And just a few big plays at a time is what kind of happened. That long touchdown pass, what did you say? They scored the one turnover. They scored points off of, or points on the missed field goal. It's kind of the game right there, almost, yeah, when there's offense kind of stalls late in the game. But all right, so let's move on to the next game. You're Fresno State at Sam Boyd Stadium, taking on UNLV. Rebels have a pretty good quarterback now, it seems like. Or is it that they played Fresno State?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to like take credit away from Dalton Sneed, because, you know, if he was going to step in against any team, I think Fresno State at this point is probably the best.
The need for speed worked. 91-yard touchdown run.
I think that series of plays is kind of emblematic of everything you need to know about the Bulldogs this year. Because for those who didn't watch the game, what it basically came down to is, the Bulldogs had UNLV pinned deep in their territory, and James Bailey actually forced a fumble the play before that, and it was recovered by Nathan Madsen, but it got overturned on review. So immediately after that, Snead breaks like two or three tackles, including in the end zone, ends up running 91 yards for a touchdown. Basically puts the game out of reach. And, I mean, I don't know, man. It's just, it's getting harder and harder to watch. Just, you know, you, when you're getting blown out by 25 points against a team like UNLV, that's just, I mean, I think I may have said it last week that, you know, blowing a 31-point last, a 31-point lead last week is unacceptable. Well, guess what? Losing by 25 to UNLV is to
probably a lesser team, right?
Giving up 364 yards rushing against UNLV is unacceptable.
And here's the thing, too.
You know, and I mean, yeah, some of that is skewed by Snead's big run, but I mean,
Lexington Thomas only 15 of 19 on the ground.
Yeah, well, that's because, you know, and especially here in Fresno, right? Let me tell you about Charles Williams. For those of you who don't know, Charles Williams is a Fresno product. He went to high school here in town. He actually played for the high school that was my old high school's rival, right? But he, if I remember correctly, he had like a 2,000-yard season his senior year. Like, he was one of the more dynamic talents in the city. Fresno State never offered him a scholarship.
Oh, jeez.
And UNLV swooped in, took him right out from under their noses. And, I mean, to be fair, this was at the same time that Fresno State had offered other guys scholarships. I think they ended up bringing in three running backs from elsewhere, none of whom have really played yet this year. But, you know, it's not a good look, rightly or wrongly, when a guy who is right on your doorstep, they literally play like 4 miles from Bulldog Stadium, 18 carries, 153 yards and a touchdown. It's not a good look for the coaching staff that they let that kind of talent get away. Basically doubled his yards
that game for the season.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll see how the rest of the season shakes out. But I mean, when a local product way that Charles Williams did against this defense yesterday, it's just, you know, fans around here to fans around here.
So this is a big loss. Drewder's, he's still hanging around, I take it. We had a check in with him this morning.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. And, you know, the fact that he's not going anywhere is just making this fan base kind of lose their minds, I think. You know, because let's be real, the defense played like hot garbage because you give up 364 yards rushing to UNLV. And at the same time, you know, Chase and Virgil, I still think he's the answer. I still think that they need to stick with him just because, you know, it's more than about this year, but man, you know, you can't throw for almost
1/3 of your passes. You know, 34%.
You know, and he had 31. He had almost 300 yards, but dude, he has to be more consistent. And I mean, if you look at some of these, you know, some of these figures, I'm trying to look up what they were on third down.
I guess not good.
They were, let's see if I can find it. They were 7 of 20. Third downs. And they were 0 for 2 on third, on fourth down as well. It's just, this team is just not progressing at all. And when you contrast that with, you know, UNLV, you know, I think we all kind of agreed that before the season, this was a team on the rise. Like, they had some interesting talent they were bringing in. And this was the kind of game where you really started to see that come out because, you know, they have a quarterback who can run 91
yards
for a touchdown.
Even without that,
he
still would
have
50 yards.
And they have,
which is reasonable.
Yeah. And I mean, they still have a pretty decent running game, even when Lexington Thomas is kind of having an off night. It's just, I don't even know what to say. It's just really kind of crappy around here.
So is their next game at home next week?
Nope, they're on the road in Reno against Nevada.
Really,
who we'll get to, like, in a moment.
At this point, if he's not gone, is there like, I know I don't need to bring it up, like, oh, he should be gone, like I said, for a couple weeks. But what will it take? Like, what,
well, he should be
right?
Gone. I mean, he should be. Yeah, because this is the I had to go and look it up. They haven't lost to UNLV this badly since 1980.
Because last year was a fluky rain type game where it's kind of just some wackiness happened late, so that doesn't really. And it was close too. It was a
game. And they mentioned in the And they mentioned on the post-game radio show that Fresno State now has lost 15 of their last 19 games. And that is the worst stretch ever in the history of the program. And it's not like they're even competitive. Like I said before the season, they just have to be competitive. They're losing by 25 against UNLV. Who
Bring
lost
it.
To Idaho?
Get
yes.
more bad. I want this. Be like, more bad.
They make UNLV look like world beaters. And, you know, there's only so many times you could say, we got to look at the film. We got to just improve. Like, they're missing tackles left and right. Snead broke like three or four tackles on that long touchdown run of his. And that's just kind of emblematic of how the season is going. This team isn't getting any better. It's like, it's basically exactly the same way it was last year, where there's, you know, sketchy quarterback play, missed tackles all over the field. They still can't run the football. Dontell James only had 53 yards. He averaged less than 3 yards a carry. The offensive line is terrible. The defensive line is terrible. And, you know, there's nothing to indicate that they're going to get any better because they're basically just the same team
and,
week
you know,
after
it's
week.
Also kind of not the best situation. The schedule doesn't get easier. Yeah, going to Nevada, Nevada's okay. But San Diego State, at Utah State, Air Force. Yeah.
The only game they're favored in for the rest of the year is the home game against Hawaii. And honestly, I don't even know if they're going to win that.
If Drew Brown does what he does, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that in a minute. Fresno State is a bad team. They're one of the worst teams in the group of five. I think we can pretty clearly say that now.
If DeRuiter's, is he safe to the end of the year?
That's what the athletic director says. I think if they keep getting blown out like this, it's going to force his hand, and I don't see any indication why that won't happen.
Okay, let me ask you. Okay, what would it? Okay, that's all. I won't dive deeper because that's yet there's support.
I mean, let's put it this way: they lost by 25 against UNLV. If they lose big next weekend too, you know, the crowd at Bulldog Stadium when they come back for homecoming in a couple weeks against San Diego
is
State,
the
by the way.
Game?
Is it's going to be like a library.
Will they be?
Yeah, it is. It's going to be like a library, and they're going to get blown out in that game too. And then at that point, they're going to be like, what, 1-6,
1-5? Well, yeah, 1-6 after if that does
and
not
do they
come
really,
to a win.
I mean, people have been calling for his head for the better part of a year and a half now, and I think if they're 1-6, yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's just—I hate to say it—but I think he's just in over his head at this point. The team isn't improving. They're not really getting actively worse. They just kind of are what they are, which is, you know, terrible on the lines, terrible at tackling. You know, they can't run the ball. The quarterback still has room to grow. Yeah, I still think sticking with Virgil is the right move, but he's not going to be the guy to get them back to competitiveness. I think
do you think there'll be more Aztec fans than Bulldogs fans for that game?
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't go that far. But I guess it wouldn't surprise me if that.
All right, so let's move on to the final game, which, again, stupid, smart people in Hawaii, or not smart, smart, dumb people, won't allow us to watch these games anymore. We missed Hawaii and also the sultry tones of Robert Kekalula in this game. Hawaii wins 38-17. And what in Nevada, it was only 17 because Nevada happened to score two late touchdowns to make it respectable. Drew Brown.
I wish in retrospect I had had the courage to call this my stupid upset pick. Because, you know, generally speaking, weird things happen all the time on the island. Generally speaking, even though the Warriors have been down for most of the last two or three or four years, they still play better on the island. And I think that last night was really the best possible example of that. You know, the quarterback switch you mentioned, Drew Brown, he came out and had the best game that a Hawaii quarterback has had
since. I'll say Cole
Brennan.
Come on.
Question mark? Yeah, well, I mean, Bryant Moniz after him had a couple of pretty nice games as well. Basically, since like the heyday of Hawaii quarterbacks, you know, he was 15 of 18, 222 yards, two touchdowns, you know, no picks, I think is really important. Like, they took care of the football. They were balanced on both sides, you know. Hawaii and Nevada just didn't have an answer. Like, the same way that you know, Fresno State's defensive line is pretty lousy. Is Nevada's any better? Because they just got run over by the Hawaii running game.
What's going on like this? Also, a point to note, is I think Nevada has only beaten Hawaii at Hawaii one time ever, and I think that was a couple years ago. So when I was previewing the game, I was like, I know they've struggled, but I'm like, Hawaii's just bad. And that was before we knew they're – we knew they made the quarterback switch, but when Drew Brown played last time, he wasn't anything special. But here's the thing. Nevada's offense didn't play bad on their own, right? James Butler had a nice 100 – no touchdowns, but had over 150 yards. Tyler Stewart had above-average game, not amazing, but had over 200 yards, completed, 60% of his passes. It's just – that freaking defense. They couldn't stop St. Juice, who had 200 yards, averaged 10 yards a carry. And Marcus Kemp, who's probably their best player, had 88 receiving yards, six catches. And then you had, who's this guy? This Matusle Unga, a pair of touchdowns. It's like, who's that guy? Two catches, two touchdowns? They're finding different receivers. It's just the defense. It's a tight end. That makes sense, yeah. But it's just a defense that Nevada's.
I mean, yeah, and I mean, again, you know, Tyler Stewart, if you look at his box score, he was fine. But again, this was another situation, I think, where they just didn't find big plays in the passing game. You know, Hawaii had five plays where they gained more than 15 yards in the air, and Nevada only had three. So, I mean, if you take those away, like, what is Stewart really doing? You know, if you take away those three big plays, he's got 16 completions for like 150 yards. And that's not the kind of production that they need to be able to keep up. And I mean, to be able to get blown out like this by three touchdowns on the road, I mean, I think you would have expected them to have a little bit of trouble. But to just not show up like this is really disappointing, I think, for a lot of Wolfpack fans.
Stewart didn't run very well. I know the sack numbers aren't included, but 10 of 8 had a 17-yard long run, but he was sacked four times, seven behind the line of scrimmage, seven TFLs. So Hawaii's defense had a pretty good game as their own. Like, even Russell Williams had, 12 total tackles, but Hawaii's defensive front stopped Stewart when just slowed him down. They're trying to run. Like, again, we can't watch. I don't know exactly how the sacks or TFLs turned out, but you sack him four times. That's good on Hawaii's defense. And Hawaii, the only reason this game was close was Nevada made a push. It was 38-3 heading into the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And I mean, give him credit too, because at least when Hawaii had a couple of turnovers late, or at least they had one turnover late, you know, they were able to turn that into a pretty easy score. But again, you know, if you look at the drive chart, you know, the first drive, they get to the Hawaii 9. And, you know, I give Polian credit for going for it instead of settling for three. But, I mean, the fact that they weren't able to convert that drive may have kind of doomed them in the long run. But yeah, it's that defense, man. Like, if you look at the drive chart, 10 plays, 81 yards for a field goal. 10 plays, 88 yards for a touchdown. 6 plays, 79 yards for a touchdown. So it's not as though Hawaii was getting really good field position. They were just working this defense down the field left and right. And, you know, this is kind of the best case scenario for the Warriors. Like, they have a quarterback who knows how to take care of the football, who can be efficient. And they have at least a two-headed running game. You know, because Lakalaka didn't get very many carries. He did score once on 5 carries. But, you know, between St. Juste and Paul Harris, like, if they can get, you know, 35, 40 carries between them a game, and they can average, you know, maybe they won't average 10 yards a play like they did against Nevada. But if they can get, like, 5 yards a carry, they'll be in a lot of games, especially at home, because they're a lot tougher on the rock than they are on the road. But, you know, even when they go on the road, if they can do something like this with a new quarterback who knows how to take care of the football.
Yeah, they go on the road and play San Jose State next week, and their rush defense, as we discussed earlier, is pretty awful.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll see how that shakes out. But I think, you know, we've seen flashes of what this team can do in Hawaii, and this was just kind of the first instance where they really put it all together and put forth a really dominant effort. And I think that puts
where would you put them in the division? Where would you put them in the West Division? Fifth? Fourth ahead of Fresno and San Jose? Okay. What's the, I want to check real quick probably. Since they play San Jose next week. Let's see what the football power index, is that what it's called? FPI or efficiency index? One of those, let's see, I want to check, because we're going to wrap this up here really quick. I just want to see, since they're playing San Jose next week, internet chugging along. Okay, let me, I want to give you a guess here without looking. I'll give you a hint. This is a surprising number, but what percentage is the stats say that Hawaii is going to beat at win at San Jose next week? 25%.
Yeah, is it like 40%?
But yet they have them favored over 50% at home versus UNLV, and it'll be the week after.
I mean, I guess we'll see it. You know, it's a lot different going on the road than it is being on the island. And historically, like in the last few years, they have struggled on the road. But I think, you know, San Jose State, especially, is a team that might be vulnerable to the kind of team this Warriors team wants to be. But, you know, we'll talk about that a little more later this week. But
that is that. We're done. Conference is in full swing. Anything, any tidbits you want to add? You want to add on a fire DeRuiter or something before we head out of here?
Fire DeRuiter, fire Polian, fire Carragher, et cetera.
Man.
No. I mean, he's there.
He's only been there, what, 2 years, right?
Feel for the program, but.
He got a scoreboard, right?
Yeah, more or less. They do. It's a very nice scoreboard, I will admit. It works half the time.
That's a good one there, half the time, because it never lights up for Fresno. Oh, that's what I thought you meant.
I wasn't even going there.
I thought you were being subtle about the scoring points.
I think I just got self-owned.
I'm sorry that that's what you meant. I'm like, oh, that's a good one. Real subtle jab there. All right, so that's our show for tonight. Check us out if you would. MWCConnection.com. Matt will still continue writing with tears running down his cheeks about Fresno State, I hope. Right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I'm working on
okay, a recap
right now.
So
it should be up by the time this
comes out. Go and read
that,
see how that turned out. If you, we got a quick piece on the quarterback situation from Keith. Crap, we have too many keys. Keith S., I'll go with that because I know that's his last name, about Dalton Sneed being pretty good. But week five is in the books. Conference plays here. We may have some bowl projections because with conference games, we can actually sift through. And because really, week two bowl projections, those are kind of weak, I think. So you can't really know anything about that. But yeah, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. We've had a lot of people listen, so I appreciate that. I think we're doing something right. I hope it's not robots listening because... or those stupid robot clicks, but hopefully it's actually real people. If you actually listen to the end, put a comment, say, hey, I didn't abandon the show. But yeah, check us out, MWCConnection.com. As always, yeah, we don't like your team, or we're biased against your team. I think both.